Welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining me this evening. Chris Milligan and Jim Botello, my guests. The third annual JFK Assassination Conference just took place this last weekend. Chris, was there any news, any new story or evidence that broke at this conference that you felt was really astonishing, something that we maybe haven't heard before?
The stuff from the Honor Guard and the people at the Bethesda autopsy was really probably the most astounding, because to listen to Hubert Clark, who was a member of the Presidential Honor Guard, buried hundreds of soldiers at Arlington, and then his last burial was JFK, and to hear his voice and what he called the feeling of betrayal, because he had believed many things all this year, and you know, he was an upstanding person and he did his job. And then when he, you know, got to meet the people from Bethesda and they each got to tell their story, and like I say, when they first heard it, you know, the Honor Guard wanted to fight these guys. They thought, oh, what do you mean? And but then when they figured out that both of these people were telling the truth, and that there had been a manipulation of the casket and delivering bodies and stuff, the betrayal that Mr. Clark shows, because, you know, he's very proud of his service, very proud of what he did. And to find out that he'd been used, just really, it was quite poignant. And then we had some very interesting things at the LBJ panel also. But, you know, you were talking about earlier, and one thing how intelligence operations operate is a lot on lies. And one how also how secret societies work is they sit and watch you. The Skull and Bones is at Yale. You're tapped your junior year. The end of your junior year. So the group gets to watch you for 3 years, and they find out, okay, well, let me see, if I push this guy here, he's going to do that. And they don't just go for quote-unquote evil or bad people. I mean, they want all kinds of people in there that are very, very useful. And we did a book by Don Adams, who was an FBI agent. He was 6'7", a gentle giant. And in his book, he showed how he was early on, he was in Georgia, and they asked him to go find this guy by the name of Joseph Miltier, and who was this right wing, because there is a lot of testimony that shows that there was information through right wing circles, Minuteman and stuff like that, that had foreknowledge of the Kennedy assassination. And Don Adams, in his book, and he had discovered it earlier on, we showed where there was manipulation of his FBI reports before the assassination, because of it showed the foreknowledge. And then Don was moved from Georgia and sent to Dallas and put on the JFK assassination investigation of the FBI. One of the first things they did for Don was they took him into a room and showed him the Zapruder film. Don looked at that and said, gosh, there's no way Oswald could have done that. His fellow agent said, Don, you better keep that to yourself. The decision's already made in Washington. Then they took him to the sixth floor. And Don had been in the Korean War. He had shot rifles. He knew about them. And they showed him the sniper's quote-unquote nest, and he looked through there and he says, well, there's no way Oswald did this. And again, his fellow agent says, well, you better keep this to yourself, because the decision has already been made in Washington. And so the way these operations work, I mean, they will tell, you know, if you're anti-communist and stuff like that, they'll make sure that the lie they tell you is going to, you know, push your anti-communist button. But they find out whatever. And then another interesting thing is, and we didn't have this at this conference, but the last one we had Tosh Plumlee. and we've had other assassins. And one thing the assassins tell you is that because they were in Dealey Plaza that day, they had nothing to do with the assassination, but when they were walking around, they saw all these other assassins that they had met at different camps. And that's one way that you muddy the waters, because you bring in all these people, and they have nothing to do with it. And for the assassins, the other thing it does is because, you know, they aren't supposed to talk about what they've done, right? So it puts another hand on their shoulder and says, how are you going to explain that you were in Dallas on 11/22? So it's a very sophisticated operation with a lot of wilderness of mirrors that is, you know, directed misdirection to make you think other things. And again, at its core, it was a psychological warfare hit. We went into shock. And then 2 days later, we saw, you know, Jack Ruby shoot Lee Harvey Oswald live on TV. That's
so we were just being kept on our heels. It was just one hit after another, you think, at that point.
Right, right. And it puts you into shock. I mean, you know, I was in junior high school, and they, you know, I got a call from the office, and there was my paper boss, and they took me out on the street selling newspapers, and only twice in my newspaper paperboy career did I do that. Once when Kennedy was shot, and then when Lee Oswald was shot. So yeah, it's very traumatic, and it puts you into shock. It put the whole country into shock, and it's never been the same since.
We'll take a break, then we'll come back. We'll start taking your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Our guests this evening, fresh off of the third annual Kennedy Assassination Conference that took place, we have with us Jim Botello, who was a roommate and friend of Lee Harvey Oswald. Also, Chris Milligan, who is a researcher, investigator, and author. We're also going to take your calls now. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you have questions for our guests, theories, ideas. We'd love to hear from you now. Let's go wild card. Line one, Dennis in Philly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you, folks? Yeah, I have a quick comment and a question. You know, the gentleman that was on first, you know, he wrote that book, and he said that it is possible to be shot from the front and for the head to jut to the front. Like this, let me tell you this. I used to box. When somebody used to punch me in the front, my head used to jut back. If somebody gave me a left hook to the right side of my face, my head would jut to the left. This is physics, okay? And so basically what we're being told here is that the laws of physics does not exist in the JFK case. If you're shot in the front, your head is going to jut to the front, not to the back. That's what we're being told here, which is an absolute insult. But the question is do you think that, was there ever any talk about, because I heard this, I don't know if it's true or not, that they got some of the best sharpshooters around to recreate this shooting with a World War II bolt action rifle to get two perfect bullseye in two perfect shots.
I wasn't that first person, but it never had. They did do some tests. Nobody's been able to replicate it. When they did do the test in Dealey Plaza, they didn't do it from the sixth floor. They created a stand that was lower than it. And then they still even couldn't do it. I mean, nobody has ever been able to replicate three shots from a Mannlicher, however you say that name, rifle. It's never been done.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in, Dennis. Let's go to wild card line two. Mayotte calling in from New York City. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I really love these two guests. Thanks, Dave. NG, I have a three-parter, gentlemen. Get your pens ready. And the first part is I'd like to hear more about the connection to what Masumoto refers to as the other Dallas in terms of Bobby Kennedy. Were some of the same players involved? What might have been the time frame and any other connections? Recently heard, that's the first part. The second part, recently heard, I believe it was David Talbot, on his book on Alan Dulles. Now he was probably on BAI Pacifica, because one of the things that he discussed there was what happened when the Alphabet beat to death Patrice Lumumba and Kennedy. And I believe I've seen some footage, a video, where Kennedy was blindsided, and you see him on the phone where he is just, you know, can't even believe that they have went ahead and killed Lumumba. I'd also like to hear some discussion, because Professor James Tracy, who did a lot of work around the fact that Sandy Hook was not what we were told, explained that the conspiracy theory term was a term that he called it a weaponized term. It came up to basically put down the researchers at the time who were investigating the JFK assassination. So I think that's a very interesting point, a weaponized term by the Alphabet. Now, the last part of my question, and I have to prefix this, Linda Perry, news reporter at BAI Pacifica, recently did a report that almost a thousand black folks have been shot first, asked questions later by the police, or maybe they die in jail like Sandra Bland. And the point is, and it's also a suggestion for next year's conference, why not bring somebody like Dick Gregory, who, you know, originally before that term came about, conspiracy theory, you know, said the official story with Mark Lane wasn't true, and have him do a speculative fiction piece, meaning that this, although Kennedy had to be brought around a lot of the civil rights issues, Bobby was even more so, went to see the deep poverty in Mississippi and in Appalachia. The idea would be, what would have happened, speculative fiction, if they had lived, in terms of the situation of black people, because there's an ongoing genocide, whether it's a mass incarceration system or what have you, cages or graves, that's not being dealt with by the majority population. They don't see
my,
it. And I'd like
my,
to hear what...
I appreciate the call. We're going way off topic, as tonight we're talking about JFK. Thank you for calling in. She was asking about the connections with the other Dallas. Are you gentlemen familiar with this topic and what that might mean?
Well, Robert, she's talking about Robert Kennedy's murder. And, yes, it seems like a lot of the same people were involved. There is some testimony that a gentleman by the name of David Morales was in L.A. at the time. But it was done as a cycle, you know. You have Ciarán Ciarán. He talks about that he was part of MK Ultra. He was hypnotized, and so you have a very hinky situation again. If Robert Kennedy would have lived, we probably would have gotten closer. Finding out about his brother's death. And then the thing about Talbot and Dulles and Kennedy being blindsided, yes, Kennedy was blindsided all the time by what the CIA was doing. And there's the famous quote, he was going to smash them to the winds. And then, you know, about Dick Gregory, I have a lot of respect for Dick Gregory, and we would love to have him at any of our conferences. He was one of the first persons to go out there and put his... life and career on the line and talk about controversial subjects. And he has been a strong proponent of that Lee Oswald didn't do it and it was a coup d'etat. And then her comment about conspiracy theory. Absolutely, there's a CIA memo that talks about, using the term conspiracy theory to besmirch people that are questioning what happened. And, you know, it wasn't a CIA operation, official CIA operation. It really wasn't an official government operation. It was something that was done extra-constitutional by people that used, parts of our government. and use parts of our government to cover it up. But it was never, quote unquote, an official act. And there's another book out there called by James Douglas called JFK the Unspeakable. I strongly recommend people to read that because it really goes a lot into the backstory of what Kennedy was trying to do and why some people didn't want him to do such things, such as having peace instead of a world at war all the time. I mean, I'm tired of all this war, and there's no reason for it, really, as far as I can see.
Jim, I have an email in from Evan from Indiana, and he's wondering, why do you believe, of all the people in the world, why was Oswald picked as the patsy for this specific crime? I mean, somebody that had such a love for our country, for the president, as it's claimed by people like Judith Vary Baker and yourself, it just seems like it would make more sense to go after a true subversive, somebody who really was out there, making a name for themselves, doing destructive things towards the government.
Well, Oswald was educated in the Russian language. Before he returned, before he went to Max 9, from what I understand, he attended the Monterey Language Institute in Monterey, California, for a short while. And then when he got into the outfit that I was with at Max 9, he continued his education of the Russian language and sort of was working on perfecting it. And there aren't too many Marines or servicemen that are proficient in the Russian language. And they checked his ability to learn languages quickly, and they found out he had a great capacity for learning languages. And so actually he was sent to Russia on an assignment. And then apparently he accomplished that assignment and returned here to the United States. And he was still paid by the CIA or Army Intelligence or Navy Intelligence, whatever it was. In fact, there's a lot of documentation saying that he was even paid by the FBI. He was an FBI informant. And so they had him in doing a certain job in the southern United States in New Orleans, and that's where he met
Judith, right?
This Judith Vary Baker, and they became very close friends, and were working together on a cancer research. And from that, they found he was an ideal patsy. So he met some very important people, and the very important people knew some more important people, such as Lyndon Johnson, Hunt, Baker, and Billy Saul Estes.
All right, well, we got to take a break. Obviously, right guy, wrong place, wrong time. His ways of working might have worked against him. We'll talk more about that in LBJ right after this. Chris, talk to me a little bit about, you said at the conference you were talking about LBJ on the panel and what his connection was to this. Do you believe that LBJ really did have a nefarious hand involved in the assassination of Kennedy, or is that just more speculation?
No, absolutely. There's a bit of a question whether he was, quote-unquote, the linchpin or the mastermind. Myself, I come down on the linchpin part, where it'd be hard to shoot the president and not have the vice president on board. because isn't he going to research it and find out who did it? Well, you know, LBJ appointed the Warren Commission, and they didn't really do it. And, you know, he asked the question about was there new things, and actually there was quite a few new things. I mean, one thing about these conferences is you get bombarded by a lot of stuff and, you know, probably a little bit overloaded. But it was just amazing all the different things that came out. And the LBJ panel, there was so much testimony about LBJ's nefarious dealings, his connections to many, many murders. We had an interesting gentleman by the name of Gordon Ferry, who was out of Marine military intelligence and spent many years as an advisor to the NSA, advisor to the presidents of the United States. And he just added a whole lot to the scenario that he knew about the involvement of Johnson with in both the cover-up and his involvement with a gentleman by like the name of Mack Wallace, who there's been four or five different fingerprint experts. There was a fingerprint found upstairs, and now actually people have shown that there's three fingerprints of Mack Wallace. Mack Wallace was a gentleman who murdered quite a few people, actually went to jail for it, but would get out. And there was just a lot of recitation of history that shows the type of person that Johnson was. And yes, he was involved.
Doesn't it seem strange to you, though, to have this kind of conspiracy? That's an awful lot of people to be involved in a murder and nobody slip up and talk about it.
Well, actually, quite a few people did talk about it. There's Dick Russell's book about Richard Case Nagel. You know, when you have operations like this, you have a lot of
right. But the people that have spoken about it, are they easily vetted? Can we actually prove their aspect inside of the story, or does it fall apart once we actually start to scrutinize it?
Oh no! When you scrutinize it, it becomes a coherent whole. Richard Case Nagel, he knew something was going on. He could have actually been involved as being one of the patsies. He knew something was going involved. So he goes into a bank and shoots a hole in the ceiling, so he's in jail when the JFK assassination happens. Okay, there's a lot of foreknowledge. It has been 52 years. There it is, a myriad of books out there that don't get any shrift at all because they don't say Oswald did it. I mean, if I wanted to, you know, make a lot of money in this business, I just would have to print a book that said Oswald did it. Judith Vary Baker was offered a lot of money to say, well, because it's very highly provable that she knew Oswald, and all she would have to say, well, you know, he lied to me, and yes, he did it. But no, she has, you know, suffered amazing slings and arrows because she has stood up for the truth.
All right, let's take our break. We'll come back and return to your calls on Coast to Coast AM. It is the 13th annual JFK assassination special here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. We're taking phone calls now. East of the Rockies, George in Chicago, welcome to the show.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for staying up late or getting up early with us this morning. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah, I got something across with Chris here. People don't realize after John F. Kennedy was killed, who got ousted? The shoebanger, Khrushchev? Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, people don't realize John F. Kennedy double-crossed the New World Order, what they call today the New World Order. The UN began to control the world, and they all got in trouble, even Russia, if you remember correctly. And Oswald was one of the shooters. The number one shooter, that was a kill shot. That was right in the neck. Both of John F. Kennedy arms went up around the throat. Remember? Mm-hmm. That was a kill shot. Expert sniper. And to make a long story short, number one problem of the world is not global warming, it's population. They don't talk about a lot no more. But Oswald was one of the shooters.
Well, he failed the paraffin test. Okay, and if you shoot a bolt-action rifle that's as loose as that, you're going to have nitrates on your cheek. He failed the paraffin test. Okay, the you know, they didn't find any fingerprints on the weapon until the weapon had been sent to Washington and then sent back to Dallas. And we have testimony from the coroner that, you know, he had a hard time getting the ink off of Oswald's hands, okay, when they brought the rifle back and put it on it. Oswald was not a shooter. We have too much testimony that he was other places in the building. We have too much testimony from people that were in the Texas building that, you know, that were on the stairs, that nobody came down. We have testimony from Dallas police officers that they were up there in just a little bit over a minute, found Lee Oswald on the first floor drinking a Coke. Lee Oswald was not a shooter.
All right. Thank you, George.
He had difficulty qualifying in the Marine Corps as a marchman.
Really? Now, that flies in the face of a lot of the reports. Right. I thought a lot of the reports, Jim, said that he was quite a skilled marksman. You're saying that that's not the truth?
What was that again?
There have been many reports that he was a very skilled marksman. You're saying that that, in fact, was not the truth?
He was not a skilled marksman. That's correct.
All right. Fascinating. Let's go to wildcard line one, Roger. In Tennessee. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Doing well, Roger. What did you want to bring up?
Real quick, shout out birthday. Happy birthday to Ed Ragsdale. Real quick. I'm sorry. One thing, over my years of research of JFK, I'm a kind of a gun nut, I suppose you can say. And the, I guess you could call it a Carcano or a Carcano Model 91 /38 carbine that was used in the assassination. I prescribe no particular theory as to who killed JFK, but interesting with the Oswald theory is that that rifle takes a 6-round in-block clip. And it's not like a Mauser or a Springfield or even your Remington 700 type rifle that you can just load rounds into a spring-loaded magazine. They must be contained by a metal clip and inserted directly down into the magazine. For my research, I've maybe found two references to a clip being found in the book depository. Otherwise, the rifle would be effectively a single-shot rifle. You would have to insert by hand into the chamber of the barrel one round at a time. And based off the rapidity of the rounds that Oswald allegedly fired, he could have not have achieved that rate of fire without one of those in-block clips. And I was just wondering if you guys had heard or researched anything about that.
According to the official evidence, there was no inbound clip found. And actually, if you look at the three bullets that found, the chain of evidence is completely blown. Captain Fritz picks them up, puts them back down, and then when actually you look at the bore marks on them, two of them would have matched the Caracano, but the other one didn't match it. And, you know, and there's so much testimony that actually the first rifle that was found was a Mauser. There is policemen in their reports that talk about that. There was news reports from Walter Cronkite. So there's a lot of confusion about different things, and probably because there was more than one rifle. There was a cover-up that done. But as far as the official records. There is no record of any clip, and I'm sure if they had a clip, they would have done that, because that would have helped, you know, because, again, nobody has ever shot the rifle in the time that the Zapruder film shows that the shots are done. It just can't be done.
Wild card line four. Let's go to Michael in Long Island. Welcome to the show, Michael. Michael, are you there?
Yeah. Hello?
Yep. Okay, now
hello?
We can hear
you. Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, you're there. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'm on Long Island. In the early 1980s, I worked for a bank, and there was a client. I'm connecting this to the cabal, and I want to question Chris. His name was Stavros Niarchos. He is a nemesis of Aristotle Onassis. He said that he got it done. So I want to know, in all these years, has anybody looked into this?
Yes, people have looked into Stavros, and Ari has some very interesting history involved with the drug trade and other things. I don't know directly whether Stavros was involved or not. And what more is your question there? The gun? I don't quite understand that.
Well, Stavros, being very rich and powerful, and this happened in New York Charter Corporation that later became Irving Trust Company, he said that he and others had actually funded this coup d'etat. He didn't call it that, but he was very open about it. I haven't seen a book written about it yet.
No, I haven't either. This is something that people can explore. But there are, you know, lots of different links out there that show foreknowledge. And again, you know, operations such as this do not happen on their own. A lot of the speculation has been from people, well, when you do an operation like this, you bring in foreign shooters, because you do not want to have an American there at a rifle going to shoot his president, because what happens if he has second thoughts? So you bring in mechanics that's basically what they do for a living. You have them do the job, and then they're out of there very fast. And then you have a lot of other people running around who you can misdirect and say, well, it was the mob, it was this people, it was these people, it was what. But again, a lot of that is just misdirection, because the jewel of the JFK assassination is the cover-up. The cover-up was very well thought out and very well planned. It, like I say, it's done by a script. And if you read about Lansdale, he did things like this. And he was head of Operation Mongoose, the CIA operation that was set up to kill Fidel Castro.
All right, let's go to Wild Card Line 2, Joe in the Bronx. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Dave?
Doing well, Joe.
I just wanted to ask, now, with the autopsy on JFK, were there any mishaps, miscues, or strange incidents with the autopsy? And can you mention a few?
Well, the first miss thing is you have Dennis David, who was the corpsman of duty, and he got a call and says, you're going to be receiving a casket. And they received a metal shipping casket and brought that in, and that was delivered a half hour before the entourage showed up with the hearse and the official body brought up. And then we had some most James Jenkins, who was a 21-year-old technician who was in the morgue from about 3 o'clock that day till about 9 o'clock the next morning, and was, you know, involved with the autopsy of touching the president and doing the Y incision and all kinds of things. We looked at the quote-unquote official autopsy photographs, and he stated quite clearly that the autopsy photographs were not real. The phone that's in there was not in the morgue that in Bethesda. The thing that's holding up the president's head was not in the Bethesda morgue. They used something completely different, the chalk block. And again, we had Hubert Clark there testify that, yes, because he saw the president's body sitting on the morgue table, and it was on a chalk block. It wasn't on the stand that is shown in the official autopsy photographs. So the official autopsy photographs are not really the official autopsy photographs. And then when you talk to the x-ray technicians, they testify that the official x-rays that are shown now are not the x-rays that they took. And there was many more that they took that aren't there. And then you have David Manick has come out that's shown that they're completely, forged and false. So the scientific evidence and the technical evidence shows that Lee Oswald didn't do it. I mean, he had no way to affect all that. And a coup d'etat happened. And, our country hasn't been the same. I mean, you look at the numbers of people. We used to trust our government. We used to, but we don't anymore because they have been lying to us.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in, Joe. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for spending your evening with us. I know it's been a long weekend, and I appreciate you staying up late to be a part of this. Chris Milligan and Jim Bothello. Chris, are you doing the conference again next year? How can people keep up with you and find out about signing up and attending next year?
Okay, well, actually, we do two conferences. We do one for Lee Oswald in New Orleans around his birthday in October, and that's at oswaldconference.com. And then there is jfkconference.com. And we have we've recorded all these, and there is streaming videos that you can find at those, so that you can
Great.
See what happened at these conferences for yourself. And
we've got links up. We'll make that available for you at Coast to Coast AM. Thank you to my guests. Also, thank back to our home office, G. Lee, Nathan, of course, Tim Dennis, my engineer here, producer Chris Boros, Lisa Lyon, and George Norrie. Thank you all for spending my birthday with me here on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be back with you in December. Be safe, be kind, and love one another. I'll talk to you then.